my goodness gracious.
The world's going to fall apart.
There it is. Good.
I'm Lauren Milberger.
I'm Rachel Leishman.
And welcome to the Fordcast, a Harrison Ford podcast where we watch all of Harrison Ford's movies so you don't have to.
I need to memorize that one.
It's hard to memorize.
That one's longer than... Hard Bodies is easy.
Oh, I thought you meant harder than our original tagline.
No. Original tagline short, but Hard Bodies is like hot dudes and their bodies of work. So I got that one down. But this one, I'm like, that's too long.
I'll write it on your hand next time.
Watch Harrison Ford's movies so you don't have to.
There you go. And this time, we actually have a guest. Mystery guest, will you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name's Parisa Fitzhenley.
What?
Oh my God.
It's hyphened in everything.
And some of you may recognize Parisa from Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, and the new, I will call summer hit, Midnight Texas on NBC. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now, what I always find interesting is that when I ask people who want to, you know, would you please come on our show, if they can think of a movie right away or I have to give them a list. And right away, you said What Lies Beneath. So why was that movie particularly the first thing that came to your head to talk to us about?
Well, I mean, it's one of my favorite spooky movies, period. It's a movie that no matter where it starts, I want to see it to the end. I love like everything about it, and it's been a while since I saw it, so like I was excited to revisit it.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, first of all, why don't we talk about the amazing players? Would you like to talk about the? Are you?
I have one.
I don't know why I'm handing her. Handing her a copy.
I'm playing.
You ladies are awesome, by the way.
Oh, so are you.
Nice to be here with you.
I just realized I have Hillary on. I wasn't paying attention. I have a sweatshirt on that says Hill Yes.
Which was funny because when I first came over, I thought it said Hill Valley, and I thought it was a Back to the Future joke. And then I realized it said Hill Yes.
Hill Yes, yeah. And it's Hillary.
Because Robert Zemeckis directed this film.
It all comes back. I planned this.
I'm really good at the segues. You'll notice that. I like to bring us back on topic.
Robert Zemeckis directed it. And you know what is more important than anything else that he did?
What?
Was Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I don't care about any of the rest.
See, for me, it's about Back to the Future.
Listen.
Do you have any favorite Robert Zemeckis movies, Parisa?
My gosh. Back to the Future is amazing. Like, I think I would want to potentially go with that. I need to go and look at
it. It's hard, yeah. I had to take a look and realize, like, I forgot that he directed Death Becomes Her, Romancing the Stone.
Forrest
Gump. Oh, my God.
I completely forgot he directed that.
I have seen that movie way too many times. It's still not enough.
It was on cable a lot when I was growing up. I don't know about you, so I have also seen it way too many times.
We had the video.
Ah,
yeah, and we had like a handful of videos, so we did a lot of rewatching, stuff. So that's one I've seen like a lot, and want them to remake, and then also want to be in it.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast that brought up a really good point that because there's so much online to stream that kids aren't really rewatching, except for maybe some Disney movies when they're very young, the same things over and over again until like the VHS or the DVD like wears out like we did when we were growing up. I don't know.
Yeah.
If you think about that.
Oh, they have not met my niece. She's the same fucking thing every time. Like, I'm over there. She goes, "Do you want to watch Inside?" I'm like, "How many times have you watched this movie?"
Well, that's
like,
good.
At least, like, 15.
That
like,
makes me feel good.
Why do you need to rewatch it?
Because I think that's such a formative part of childhood. And something that we talk about on the show a lot is the fact that there are so many Harrison Ford movies that affected our childhood. And how important that is at a very, you know, formative time of your life. And I feel like, other than, you know, Steven Spielberg and obviously Harrison Ford, I feel like Robert Zemeckis also sort of fits that place with the movies that he's done.
Yeah, I mean, he's done such incredible work that is really vast in its range.
Yeah.
You know, like from like really like fun and silly stuff to scary stuff and everything in between. I'm pretty impressed.
Robert Zemeckis killing it.
Yeah, man.
Killing it. And it also, Clark Gregg wrote it, which is interesting in itself because that's Agent Coulson.
Yes. Yeah.
And
I couldn't believe I didn't know this. Like, I know that he writes, and I actually got to see the premiere of Trust Me at Tribeca, and it was wonderful, and he directed that. But I was shocked that I didn't realize that he had written this huge blockbuster movie, because it did really well.
Yeah. He died. He then came to back. I don't watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so I don't know why. Always a lot.
He did came back. It was a little complicated. And obviously, it was funny, but, you know, we booked you on the show before I knew that, and then we have another connection that you obviously have been on Netflix's Marvel shows. So,
yeah.
That's hysterical.
Our showrunner was also a writer on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, there you go.
What?
It doesn't stop.
How does it feel?
The Marvel Universe doesn't quit.
It kind of doesn't. Do you feel being a part of the Marvel family is any way different from your other jobs that you've had?
Yeah. It definitely feels, how do I say this? Like, it feels like a big family. It feels like there's so, you can feel the weight of people's experience with the comics and of their interests and their hopes and their imaginations around these characters and their gratitude for seeing the characters on screen. So it's just a really warm, exciting place to land as an actor, because the Marvel fans are there to like be in it and be a part of something, and it's great to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love my sci-fi fantasy comic book friends that, you know, there's just such a wonderful energy around it. And Marvel completely exemplifies that kind of amazing energy.
Oh, that's so lovely. I love the way you put that. I do.
Aww,
are you laughing at me?
No, she's like, that's so lovely. The way you said it was
great. Also, both of us are very lucky to be seeing Parisa's lovely face, and you lit up when you said that. So,
aww.
Yeah.
It makes my heart feel all warm when I think about it. Yeah, and it's been really amazing to interact with everybody on social media because there is just so much passion, and people really actually want to interact. That's the cool thing. It's like, you know, I feel like with other film and television that's outside of the genre world, people watch it with a bit more distance.
Mm-hmm.
But this kind of stuff allows people to like really get invested, and so you feel linked with the fans of these things in ways that I feel are different from other kinds of work.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Yeah, because I'm an anomaly in me being like, fuck yeah, hell or high water, everyone should be talking about this all the time, where most times they, like, watch a movie and they're like, cool, that was great. That's it.
You are the forerunner and the beacon, maybe is the better word, the Chris Pine fandom. Like you're holding the flag at the beginning of,
I'm standing at the end, or I'm like, you know the statue from World War II where they're all putting the flag up? That's me.
Amazing. By the way, Hell or High Water, another little like tiny degree of separation. On our show, why can't I think of his character's name right now? JP Howard plays Connor.
Oh.
Which is Sarah Ramos's character's little brother. Sarah's character is Creek. It's terrible, by the way. Like on Midnight Texas, I constantly mix people's names up with their characters.
There are
names.
A lot of characters in the show. I can understand that.
And there are certain like similarities between some of the actors and the characters, and so sometimes it just gets like I'm like, you know, I'll constantly mix people's names up and call like Dylan Bobo and, you know, like I often call Ariel Kebble Olivia. And then I'm like, it's like, you know, Olivia and Peter. I mean, wait, no, Ariel and Peter and Dylan and Chewie. I mean, Bernardo, wait, hold on. Whose names are what? And
oh my God.
Anyway, hopefully if people watch the show, they'll understand what's happening. If not, sorry about all the names.
That must make the group scenes like a bit of a hell then.
It's easier in the scene.
Oh, is it? Okay.
It's like referring to each other. I mean, it does happen sometimes that in scenes people, like I've heard people say someone's real name in the scene and I'm like,
You're like, no.
You'll see them in the for real. You know, it's great when someone's like really like in it. And then you're like, that's not going to be useful.
We can't use that.
Anyway.
So what's sort of interesting as well, I think, is that this was brought to Clark by Steven Spielberg, who originally...
I was so distracted by trying to figure out who he was in Hell or High Water. I'm like, he's Chris Pine's son. But I had to like... I'm like, give me a minute. And I was like Googling it to like figure it out. Because I made my whole family watch Hell or High Water like 4 different times when I would go home to visit. Because I was like, this is going to win Oscars. It didn't. But I like...
It was a hard year.
I was like, it's going to win. I don't care. It's men being men about relationships, and I'm into it. It's like showing everybody.
I haven't seen it yet.
It literally is like two brothers who love each other but won't admit they love each other, and it's such a man movie, and I love it.
Because of you, I know what it's about.
And fucking Jeff Bridges is Southern. It's great.
See, I didn't know all that. Like, now I really want to watch it. I mean, I wanted to watch it because JP's in it. And the thing is also, like, JP, for anybody who's listening, here's another reason to watch Hell or High Water. I think it was Variety that did an article about, they in favor of bringing back the Oscar for Best Young Performer.
Oh, I read that. Now I didn't realize who was in reference
JP
to.
Was one of the people for Hell or High Water.
That
they referenced.
Because assuming he plays like, okay, there's two kids. There's one you like barely see. And then there's the one that has like him and Chris Pine have like a whole conversation about how he's like, don't be like me. And it's like, I'm like, that's that kid. But it's like such a good, it's such a good movie. I love Hell or High Water so much. I think it was incredible. And David McKenzie is also doing that Scottish movie right now and with Chris Pine.
Is it the Scottish play in there?
No, not like that. It's about Robert the Bruce. So it's like a Scottish story and they're filming it in Scotland.
Gotcha. Wow. There's like, everything is just like interrelated in this episode.
Yeah.
It's so interesting.
Oh, that makes me so happy that I had a reason to talk about Hell or High Water. And it wasn't me forcing one.
I know. It came out organically.
So excited for that.
So this was part of DreamWorks, which is a Spielberg, Katzenberg, and Geffen. And it was the story,
Moon guy, right?
Yes.
DreamWorks is the moon guy fishing?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This guy.
It's also often known as SKG because of the three of them. So it's Steven Spielberg, Jeffrey Katzenberg, and David Geffen. And this was started actually in 94. It was funny. I thought, was it started around this time? But it was actually started in 94.
Oh, DreamWorks, not this movie.
No, DreamWorks. Like... No. And so it was. You'll notice that there's a story credit, and I hope I say her name right. Her name is Sarah Kiernachang, and she's a documentary filmmaker. And because of the WGA, she technically gets story credit, but the original story was based on her personal experiences with the paranormal.
No.
Yeah, and it was I know, right? And it was a script treatment that featured a retirement-aged couple dealing with restless spirits, which is not what's on screen.
No, right? But interesting.
Isn't that interesting? So technically she...
I want to see that movie too.
Right?
Yeah.
I also want to see a movie where like this daughter calls her mom back.
That's right.
Daughter never called her mom back.
Oh my God, she didn't. Well, listen, when you're a freshman...
I called my parents every day and I still call my parents every day. I was like, if my mom called me and I did not call her back... Her ass would have been at my school. Like, what are you doing? She would have driven there.
Is your mom as clingy as her character in this?
My mom is more so. You saw her. She just called me, and I had already talked to her today. And I have already spoken to her.
This is not the first time that this happened where we'll be recording a podcast, and we have to pause.
Because my mom or my dad. I'm sure my dad's going to call me soon and be like, well, you don't call me anymore?
So quickly, we also like to talk about kind of where Harrison Ford is in his career, because it's not just about the movies, but it's about the timeline of an actor. And he actually was really super busy in 2000. He started off the year getting an agent. And I know what you're saying. Well, why didn't he have an agent? He didn't actually have an agent, which was very rare. He had Pat McQueenie, who we've talked about briefly, who was his manager for, at the time, 15 years from when he first started out. But because of all the flops and sort of the decisions maybe that had been made at the end of the 90s, he had a bidding war. And he met with UTA, Endeavor, CAA, and ICM, and William Morris, and AMG, and he signed with UTA. But what also was very unique at the time was Pat McQueenie was still going to be his lead sort of manager, agent, technically a manager working like an agent, but he was going to be working with them, which is something that they normally wouldn't have done at the time. I feel like now everyone I know has a manager and agent, but that was a big deal that he all of a sudden went from not having one. Although it's not like he was Bill Murray. It wasn't like he had just had a phone number. But it was very rare that he only had his manager. He was also working with Steven Soderbergh on Traffic. Wow. And a lot of what they worked on together ended up being in the film. But he felt that they couldn't come to an agreement that he liked. And so eventually Michael Douglas was in Traffic. And also he felt like he didn't want to play sort of another grim character after the disaster of Random Hearts, which we can tell you, Parisa, you should never, ever see.
Don't watch
it. Oh, no. It's, I was like, I don't think I've heard of it.
Then, so that was January of 2000. In February of 2000, Harrison Ford received the AFI Award, the American Film Institute.
And that's where Carrie Fisher
Exactly. Talks. So I don't know if you know this, Parisa, but a lot of our listeners will know this as there's a very famous roasting that Carrie Fisher does of him. It's actually one of my favorite comedic speeches that she's ever given. And we'll put a little link for people who don't know it. It's quite hilarious. She quotes, I believe, Nietzsche, but she's really speaking Silent Night in German. It's hilarious. I
love her.
I think it's funnier than the George Lucas one, personally. I love it. And then in June of 2000, he had another plane crash. Unfortunately,
Take it away.
This also was not his fault. He was landing, and the wind just sort of came up too much, and it made the plane crash. Okay. So it's we'll blame the wind, perhaps,
or faulty piloting.
Yes,
faulty piloting.
Faulty piloting.
He crashed in 99, and then eventually he'll have a very almost deadly crash. What was it, 2015?
Because it was 2015, and then he almost crashed again because he was on the wrong side of the tarmac.
No, he didn't. Oh, that wasn't a crash. He just went. He went over the wrong part of the plane. He messed up.
He's fucked up. In 2016.
And we'll talk about that in 2016. And then this movie came out in July. And then in August, he literally saved two women. I don't know if you ever heard that he had done this, but he has a helicopter, which we've talked about on the show before. Mm-hmm. And he lends out his services in Jackson Hole, where he lives, if they need help, because it saves the town about $1,000 an hour for a pilot.
Wow.
Yeah. So he saved Sarah George, 20, and Megan Freeman, 22, who had climbed up so high that they got dehydration and altitude sickness and they just couldn't get their way down. But another hiker called at a cell phone. And one of my favorite quotes from this was, what's her name? Sarah George said, "I can't believe I barfed in Harrison Ford's helicopter."
Aww.
Yeah, she threw up. Not because of who he was, but because she was so sick. But she said that he was wearing a t-shirt and a cowboy hat. He didn't look like I'd ever seen him before.
Have she never seen Indiana Jones?
I don't know. I mean, it's a cowboy hat. It's not necessarily, you know.
Close. They're close.
Yeah.
Marlboro Man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny that you say that because in one of Carrie Fisher's books, she couldn't name him and she referred to him as the Marlboro Man.
And then she was like, and then we fucked. Here's my book about it.
Yeah.
10 years later.
Now officially we can talk about that. So that's something that was happening in Harrison Ford's life.
Oh, Harry.
So obviously, Parisa, you've mentioned some of your favorite parts of this movie.
Do you want me to do my recap of What Lies Beneath?
Yes. Yeah, so we like to do a little recap for people who maybe haven't seen it in a while.
I'm going to open my notes from my most recent watch.
Now, are you going to do, like, the short version or the long version?
I think I can do 4 sentences.
Ooh, this is great. I'm loving this.
This is like that. Have you watched Hollywood Game Night where they're, like, trying to describe a show in, like, 2 words? That's what I feel like right now, where I'm like, I can do it in 4 sentences.
Which is impressive because sometimes it takes days. Because
some of these movies are fucking terrible. All right. There's a couple who live in a creepy house and weird shit is happening. The couple, Harrison Ford and Michelle Pfeiffer, they think it's a ghost. Michelle Pfeiffer thinks it is their dead neighbor and Harrison Ford thinks she's crazy. Come to find out that it is Harrison Ford's ex-mistress and that he had murdered her, they both try and kill each other for like 35 minutes.
That's actually really good.
That's the movie.
Oh, also, I realized I should also mention that George Clooney by accident because it was in front of me. Harrison Ford also turned down that year Perfect Storm, which would have been Clooney, The Patriot, which ended up being Mel Gibson because he felt it was too violent.
Wow.
Yeah. Fudger died in
that movie. Proof of Life with Russell Crowe. And also, before the movie started, he flew out to Vermont early to walk the set. Because they used an actual set in L.A., but they used the house so that he would be more familiar with because it was his house. And he also talked to a real geneticist who happened to be the daughter of David Peoples, who wrote Blade Runner. To learn about what, it, you know, he actually does a lot of research, Parisa. We found out that he's a very detailed actor and he likes to make it as real as possible.
Yeah.
It's too extra sometimes. He does stuff and I'm always like.
I don't think it's extra.
You're being extra.
He did one scrub in. That might have been a little too much.
Really? See, to me, just to get the opportunity to do those things, I would do it and just be like, yeah, yeah, it's for my reason.
No, I agree with you.
Yeah, so that's why I would do it anyway. But I would never be like, I have to talk to these people. I don't know.
My issue with it would only be if I was the patient to find out that a movie star had scrubbed in. That's the only thing. As the actor, I want to learn everything possible that I can.
Well, I mean, if I was the patient, I would want to know ahead of time if Harrison Ford was going to be in my surgery, just so that I could be like, sign something or...
Can I have a selfie? Take it while I'm unconscious.
Put some makeup on, you know. For anything that you've done, Parisa, have you been able to do something that would be unique in your research for a role that you played?
Yeah, I when I was in Albuquerque for Midnight Texas doing the pilot, I was able to spend some time with the pagan community.
Oh, how
and,
cool.
I got to go to a spring equinox festival or celebration, which was beautiful and so sweet and so, like, just made so much sense. I felt connected with the earth and with the people I was with, and I was like, this is fantastic. You know, so my character is a witch, so these are the kinds of things that she would take part in or conduct. So I got to do that, and that was really fun. I'm trying to think of what else. Have I played anybody that got to do anything, like, super... Well, I got to play a cellist for a pilot, a David Marshall Grant pilot that didn't end up airing. But I got to have some great, like, cello lessons and stuff, and I previously played violin. Which they may look like similar instruments, they are not at all. So that was fun and terrifying. But good.
What was I gonna have? Oh, okay. I have a question because I don't remember, but I think, were you ever in like the bar that Luke Cage has?
No.
No, because she's in flashbacks only.
I know, but I couldn't remember it because I thought like in one of the flashbacks she was. I couldn't remember enough because I think I found that bar. And it makes me very angry because it is in the East Village. And they're all supposed to be in Hell's Kitchen.
And Hell's Kitchen is not as cool in real life as it is.
I know. Yeah, I don't think there's a...
Those shows have been ruined for me because I'll see Daredevil standing outside like Bedford Avenue. I'm like, why the fuck are you in Brooklyn? Like, why are you at the... That's the Dunkin' Donuts when you get off of the Bedford Avenue stop in Brooklyn. And he's like standing there with Foggy and I'm like, listen, dude. You're supposed to be in Hell's Kitchen. That is 3 blocks. You have 3 blocks to live on. Like, go back up to Hell's Kitchen and patrol those 3 blocks. And my one friend goes, yeah, but all Marvel, they're all over. I'm like, no. Every Marvel superhero has a specific area of Manhattan they cover.
Yeah.
I was like, Spider-Man has Queens. The Cap has Brooklyn. Like, they all have
It's called areas. Hollywood Magic.
It's not Hollywood Magic. I live here. I know now. So like, living here has ruined it.
So, and I know some of the Spider-Man stuff has been filmed in Brooklyn. So.
Right? Yeah. I'm like, ugh.
A friend of mine was in Spider-Man.
Mine too. I have 2. Oh. Who do you have? Oh, see, I have...
Yulu.
I had my friend Zach is the one who goes, hey, Spider-Man, do a flip! When he's, like, up on the roof. And then this guy I know, Gary, is the one who's hanging out the window when Stan Lee is there. Like, he's one of the guys hanging out yelling at Spider-Man when they're trying to get that guy with the car.
I think he's part of the gang. I haven't seen it yet.
It's Sorry. I saw it 3 times. It's great.
I haven't seen it either. Not anything new.
I feel bad when my friends are in it, though, and I haven't really seen good. It.
It's sad because Tom Holland's actually a 15-year-old boy. Well, not really. He's like 20. But he, like, you feel like you're watching a 15-year-old kid try and be Spider-Man. As opposed to Tobey Maguire, who was almost 30.
That's true. No, I think that's actually. I've heard some really great reviews that it's really good in that sense, and also the diversity. And,
yeah, it's great. Zendaya is awesome.
So one of the things I think that's interesting about this movie is that it's meant to be like an Alfred Hitchcock film, which is why I actually really like it, because I don't like horror per se, but I do like thrillers. I do like. An adult story. Like, that's something that we've talked about on the show before that I feel like doesn't happen as much, whereas this takes its time. You know, it's really good, I think, about giving little pieces of information that you didn't know. Like, the fact that, you know, he's the daughter's stepfather. Like, little pieces of information that you learn more about her life. Like, you did not like this movie, though, I understand.
No. That's not what I said.
Okay.
I said I don't like thrillers, and it had the one thing in a movie that's freaks me out the most, which is like, I don't like the jump scares, and this movie was like full of like them. Jump scares, though. Like, this movie, that's like all it was like, the scary parts were all like, here's the bathtub and you know something's about to pop up, and I just like, I'm like, just fucking pop up. Like, I don't want to be the suspense of waiting for it to pop up.
See, I like that. I'd rather it happen and then happen really quick, because I think that's my issue with horror movies, is that like, it's just happening all the time. I'd rather just like have a scare and then be about the story.
Well, that's fine, give me the scare, but this movie would like wait you out. Like, you're sitting there and it's like, here's the bathtub, and then like 2 seconds later the face pop. I'm like, don't do that shit. Just.
That's what I love.
Oh, yeah, me too. Reese and I are on the same page.
Even, especially because when you've seen it and you know that one's coming, and then it gets you anyway, I'm like, you guys are great. Good job, everybody.
See, I mean, I remember seeing this movie when I was a kid, and I didn't. When I rewatched it today, I was like, I don't remember seeing it. And then there was that specific scene with the sex where they heard their neighbors having sex, and then they were going to be louder. And I was like, I remember it because of this scene. I was like 9, but I was like, I remember it exclusively because I remember that scene. And then I remembered, like, I think in the back of my mind, I remembered her drowning. And other than that, like, I was like, I don't remember any of this.
Yeah, that's the thing about this film, is that I don't have that many sort of irrational fears, but the idea of drowning definitely freaks me out.
I don't like water.
You have a Natalie Wood issue, and
no,
I say that because not because she drowned, because before she drowned she did have a water issue. I just realized that was really mean.
No, I have an irrational fear of sharks, so any body of water freaks me out.
I get that.
Even if it's like a lake, I like have this like fear, and like the fact that she went in that lake when it was dark, I was like, you're fucking nuts. Like, she got that boat at night, and I was like, what are you doing?
I love the way, though, he directed it, though, because I was thinking that, too, because I forgot exactly what happened. I thought, at night? How are you going to see it at night? And I think this movie is so well directed, particularly for the genre, but the fact that you see her, and then all of a sudden you see her, like, come into the house, and then with the music, and then she's, like, soaking wet, and she, like,
drops. I love that.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh, yeah, it's good. I think she's bonkers. She went into a lake in the middle of the night.
She's obsessed.
But she's also possessed by that point.
True.
That's the thing. It's like, that was what was so... Actually, watching this again after several years, in particular after the years that we've had recently, with the awareness around feminism and the dynamics between men and women. Watching this now, and like, I was so happy and relieved every time she was kind of more possessed by the spirit of this dead woman, because she finally filled out as a human.
Oh yeah.
You know, like, I did not realize all the other times that I'd watched this how meek she is as a character, and kind of like frail. And watching any time that she got like this sort of powerful conviction was whenever she was acting on behalf of this other woman, which I thought was pretty awesome.
Yeah, something that really struck me was this sort of old-time idea of gaslighting, right?
Yeah.
I feel like now we sort of use it in a different term. We use it a lot politically. We use it not as narrow as it really was, which is from the film Gaslight, where it's a man making a woman think that she's crazy, and using a lot of these sort of ideas that we think of women at the time, of being frail, of not being stable. You know, using her car crash, the fact that her daughter has left, and that was sort of her only real, you know, she literally can't let go of her daughter when they drop her off.
Yeah.
They have to pry her hands off of her. And playing on that. And then this is the first time I've seen it again since I saw it originally, even though I remembered everything.
Oh, wow.
And I saw it in the movie theater, and it was really scary to see in the movie theater.
I was like, what kind of memory do you have?
I'm told I have a very good memory. I didn't remember everything. Like, I didn't remember it wasn't his daughter. I did not remember that at all. And so,
but that, like, my favorite part is that makes, sorry, I like cut the side of my nose.
No, it's okay.
So I was like, but that makes no, it could have been his daughter, and I don't think that would have impacted the story.
No,
it did.
It's so important.
There was a difference. Oh, were you going to say it, Lauren?
You say it first.
When she's in the tub at the very end. Do you want to say it?
Okay, so it was so creepy, and I think now I'm the older and seeing it again, is that he pretty much implies that he's going to have sex with her.
Oh, I missed that.
She's in the tub and she can't move, which is also another nightmare that I have when I can't move. I mean, I think a lot of people have those nightmares where you can't move, but like that plus the drowning thing is he says, I guess this will make me closer with, I forget the daughter's name.
Caitlin.
I guess this will make me closer with Caitlin, but every time I look at her, I will think of you.
I don't like that.
And is that, does he say anything else? But it's very much saying that he's going to try to have sex with her.
It's how he looks at her. Yeah. He's like, cause he says something. He's like, oh, like, it's kind of like, oh, funny how this all turns out now. That kind of thing. Like, well, you'll be gone, but there'll be her. We'll get closer. And she reminds me of you. Like, so,
and also I think the fact that you layer on top of that, that the woman that he had an affair with is very close in age and blonde.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a freak.
Such a freak. And when he said, even after everything he'd done, when he said that, I just like, you fucking bastard.
He's a bastard. That's right. I want to take back freak, because freaks are awesome.
Well, he's a
he's a pig.
He's a psychopath.
But not a good pig.
He's actually a psychopath, I think.
Yeah, he definitely is.
He is. And I, like, now having, like, again, being older and having, I've seen this movie probably at least six times in the past. Mm-hmm. But there's been a good chunk of time between the last time I saw it and now. And seeing it now, after having grown up and been in, like, you know, seen people, you know, show their true colors over the years and stuff, it's like, I'm like, oh my God, they really did him right. Like, he is that kind of guy who's so obsessed with him. He doesn't see himself as great. Like, he's a narcissist. He doesn't actually see himself as great, but he needs other people to see him as great.
Yeah.
And in order to be informed about himself. And it's so interesting seeing how he then deals with the situation with his dad and being compared to his dad all the time. And, you know, even that, like, it was weird that at dinner, so when they go to dinner with their friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she's explaining to her old friend, you know, why she's no longer a professional cellist. And she says, well, you know, I met him, and 3 months later, we were married. And that was her explanation for why she no longer had a job. And, you know, she already had a daughter, so it wasn't that she was like, I'm going to now take off time and take care of my child. It was, mm-hmm. I got married, which is like the most 1950s answer for yeah. why you're no longer working. But also just tells you, like, at the time I saw it this time in the movie, I was like, how friggin' annoying and, like, old-fashioned is this movie? And then later on, I realized, no, this is because her husband was so, like, insane. Yeah.
And I think also what I love about the film, too, is that it's so good at not only giving us information as we go along that, you know, you sort of find out, you know, very organically, is yeah. that it drops little pieces of information that are important and give you insight. Like yes. the fact that we find out that her husband died. The fact that she had a daughter. And I really think that they were sort of implying also that she was a little bit desperate and she felt she needed a father for mm-hmm. her daughter. And being mm-hmm. an artist, you don't make a lot of money and now you don't have a husband. And he was sort of this sort of, you know, I hate to use a boat metaphor. I was going to say a safety raft or something.
But yeah.
I boat. I know. Oh my God. Why that came to it. But
because we're talking about water.
I know. But I thought it was just so well crafted that it wasn't totally. hitting you over the head. That not everyone might pick up on those things, and it didn't take away from the film, but it added to understanding where she's coming from. And that's yeah, why and, yeah, sorry.
Oh no, I was just saying, like, I loved how in the beginning of the film they just keep asking her how she is.
Oh, yeah,
and then you start
does.
To realize, like, oh, because she looks, from the outside, she's like the ideal, you know, 2000 woman, you know? She's beautiful, slim, blonde, white, has this beautiful home in Vermont. Like what could be wrong? But everybody's like, hey, how are you? How are you doing?
Are you
yeah, but how are you doing? And like, and that happens for like a good 10 minutes or so, and you start to realize, like, oh, what is wrong with this woman? Wait a minute.
Even her, like, psychiatrist asked her. He was like, are you all right? Like, she's just sitting there, and he's like, are you all right? And it's like, no, clearly not. Like,
so here's something I wanted to read. So so I tweeted Clark online to see if he had anything to say about the film. Quote, one of the most inspiring challenges I ever faced when working as a screenwriter was writing twists for Harrison's character Norman in What Lies Beneath.
Well, he did it.
I think he did it really well. Yeah. And he was working on it so much that he had to say no to auditioning for a lead in Sports Night because he's one of the, yeah. I mean, eventually he's in the last two episodes of the whole series, but he's sort of one of the Sorkin players. He's been on West Wing. He actually is one of the, I don't know if you know this, Parisa, but he's helped start Atlantic Theater Company. So he's one of Mamet's people. So it was, you know, he had a role that Sorkin had probably written with him in mind, you know, and he had to say no. They couldn't even audition because he was so entrenched in this, because once Harrison was on board, they needed to, you know, make it more towards something that he liked. In fact, another quote that I really loved that he said was, what did I do with it? He said, I felt, God, if I ever have to collaborate with that many people again, I'm going to kill myself.
Oh, I can completely relate with that.
But he said, but I also thought that, you know, it was really wonderful to be working with so many people who were analyzing every beat so tightly and made him think about it more. But yeah, like, I thought that was such a great quote about what working in film can be like, because there's so many collaborators.
Yeah, and if you're the writer, you know, if you're the main person who that, you know, this film is coming from your hands to their hands, there's a lot of people will come in with different things, and you know, like, one note can change every single thing. You know, it's not like someone says, like, hey, can you add like another minute here to this scene, and like, if that happens, you've got to make adjustments all over the place. So I can imagine. And I mean, I think they did an amazing job. It's interesting seeing like the difference between the critics' opinion of the film and the fans' opinion of the film as well. Like, because critics seemed really, really torn about whether it was great or not at all. But seeing like fans fans votes and stuff for it, it's like, you know, 4.5 out of 5 stars.
Yeah.
You know, 9 out of 10. You know, and it's I think that they did a really wonderful job, especially in those twists. Like, good job, man.
Good work.
So good work. Do it again.
So why don't we talk a little bit about Harrison Ford's performance? Because unlike a lot of other films, this is obviously a departure for him. And really the only time that I would say he played a villain. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Is it? My God, I'm like looking to...
He always seems to play the hero.
And, he really does.
And that was actually apparently the point was from Harrison and from casting point of view was they wanted to cast someone who could play against types that it was unexpected.
Yeah.
I think the best example would be almost like casting Janet Leigh in Psycho, where everyone at the time, of course now we don't know, but at the time she was such a star that no one expected her to die at the beginning of the film.
Spoiler alert.
Sorry, I just yelled Psycho.
Psycho.
Well, it's the same thing about Scream with Drew Barrymore, that they cast her as well.
But that was also supposed to be Poe Dameron in Star Wars. He was supposed to die, and Oscar Isaac was like, no, I'm tired of dying in the first 10 minutes of a movie, but
Before Star Wars, I wouldn't call Oscar Isaac a big star Janet Leigh.
He was. The problem was he had already died in the first 10 minutes of, like, 3 movies. And so when they were like, Poe's going to die, he said, no, I'm not. He's like, I'm done. Like,
sure, he always does. I just don't think it's the same. They didn't purposely cast Oscar Isaac so people would be surprised that he died. He was a very acclaimed actor, but he wasn't a Janet Leigh at the time or like a Drew Barrymore, where they would lead the movie. And so... this is sort of the same idea of casting Harrison Ford, was that I remember in the theater being quite shocked because of his persona, to think that this is what... Plus, not to mention the fact that I think he does a really good job of playing it very straight, so to speak, through most of the film, as if you don't know. And the only time it gets a little suspect is when he's, like, begging to, like, for her apology, and he's such a bad actor in it. And I think that's on purpose.
I was like, oh, I can tell you're lying right now. But what was interesting then was that after that you realize that he's trying to seem innocent, but you don't realize like the full extent of how guilty he is.
Yeah.
Like, so it didn't bother me too much, but there's definitely a moment where I was like, oh wait. And I don't know, I don't remember, you know, because I've known for so long that he was guilty, I just, you know, I'm like, I can't remember how I felt the first time I saw that.
See, I didn't remember most of it. So watching it today, I was like, piece of shit. Like, it was just like one of those, like, it wasn't even me being shocked. It was more like, I hate him. Like, you know, that was it. Like, and I think it's because of the era we're watching it in, where whenever a guy just turns out to be a piece of shit, I'm like, okay, surprise. That's true.
Yeah.
But like,
So we're supposed to assume that he drowned her in the lake, right? Or no?
That was I think he killed her and drove a car, because wasn't it a car that opened up in the bottom of the lake?
See, that's what I thought. But then he said, he talks about how it felt to put her head underwater.
Yeah.
So then I was confused, because originally that's what I thought too, was the car.
But I think he killed her. No, I think he killed her in that bathtub. Because that's why he, like, brought Michelle Pfeiffer back to the bathtub and all that.
I'm wondering that, too.
And then put her in the car and then pushed the car off. That makes more sense. Because from what I remembered the car part. And so I thought, oh, wait, he physically drowned her?
I think he drowned her in that bathtub. I think he drowned her. That's why she would haunt the bathroom.
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
I think that makes sense. And also, then, when you think about the... what do you call it, foreshadowing or whatever, like that the neighbor carried something that looked like a body into his car and drove off with it and then came back alone.
Yeah.
You know, and that this is, you know, what he did as well. Like, he put that body in the, you know, in the car. He had to have, like, wrapped it up, put it in the car and left. And, you know, one of the things that I thought was cool about the movie was also how things like that would happen, how there were hints of things that were unrelated that would happen to her, like these little pieces of the way that life has a way of being like, hey, see how this is possible? And then you go like, oh yeah, oh my God, that's happening to me. You know, I don't know. I felt like that was pretty cool. Like her obsession with the guy, and that there was trouble in that relationship and it led to a death, but it wasn't them. It was for her to see it in her own life.
I also liked rewatching it that I started to notice, because obviously now I know that he is Sinister. Who, by the way, his name is Norman. I wondered if that was a nod to Psycho.
Norman Spencer.
It's like, oh, of course his name is Norman. But like, I was starting to notice the little sort of breadcrumbs that he was leaving for himself, like bringing up the ghost at dinner, which she was so embarrassed about, so that the friends would see that. When they're yelling outside of his office, like certain things in public that he was doing, I felt like to sort of, you know, push her on so that he could go later on, oh, well, this person saw this and this person saw that. I also noticed that all the women wore white a lot.
Maybe that's Vermont.
It could be Vermont. I mean, there was also one scene which, so you could say maybe it was a Hitchcock thing. Obviously, Michelle Pfeiffer is a Hitchcock blonde. When she's sitting with the therapist, she has sort of a gray skirt and a little like blue top and it, or sort of like sweater set. And it reminded me of Vertigo in a way. I mean, I know in Vertigo, her outfit's all gray, but it just sort of had a very sort of, maybe even birds, but it had a very sort of Hitchcocky feel to it. But no, I noticed, so she's wearing white a lot, particularly at night when she goes to sleep. The neighbor, when we first see her, she's got sort of like a white nightgown on. And then Madison's ghost, when she goes from the ghost to sort of looking more like herself, she's dressed in white as well.
Interesting.
I want to know how they filmed that in the bathtub. She's in all white and you can't see shit.
That's true.
Yeah, you can see a little bit of, you can see, are you talking about underbit?
Yeah, like. Michelle Pfeiffer is in all white.
She's probably got tape on her nipples.
Oh. But I was like, oh, I can kind of see her boobs through that. Like, but it wasn't like what would be in real life.
Yeah, which I'm like, I get it. It's like people would over-sexualize that, but I'm like, it's already gruesome. Like, make it at least like realistic. I guess. Like, if you're in an all white thing, like you can see everything.
The way that they shot her, I kept looking, going like, God damn it, she's gorgeous.
She's so gorgeous. Like, oh my God.
You know, which also made me think about how, you know, how messed up our ideas are around women and violence. You know,
she's
that she's
dying,
always super beautiful, that the ghost returns to her beautiful self when everything is fine.
Oh, I didn't think of that. Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, I mean, It's cool, but it's also, I don't know, it's just interesting. But thinking of things that are not beautiful, did you guys notice the shoes? The women's shoes?
The real ugly shoes with the blood on it?
Oh my God.
I didn't, but
it was like late 90s, early 2000s, very clunky.
The silver shit.
You're right. Oh my God, it is. Oh my God.
Why don't just give me a flip flop?
Everyone's wearing orthopedic sandals. What?
Just give me like a flip flop. And put blood on, like, a flip-flop. Don't give me that shit. That was, like, so gross.
Her shoe was the coolest shoe. Like, some of the other ones, I was like, seriously, these are the kinds of shoes that like, they sell in medical supply stores.
That's so funny.
And, you know, it's so strange to see these, like, very, like, wispy outfits that she's wearing and these, like, clunky shoes.
Right.
But that was the time. It was the time.
It was the 2000s.
I want to go back to the water, though, because it was something that made me think of the scene. First of all, Michelle Pfeiffer was a little terrified of the water scenes in a way, so that they had her take scuba diving lessons so that she'd feel more comfortable.
Oh, wow.
But also something that I didn't realize was because she was going to be wet so much, particularly in the bathtub, they put this, like, gel all over her so the water wouldn't penetrate her skin.
Oh,
I hadn't heard of that.
Well, it's probably because they would have to do so many takes and she'd be pruny by the time finished.
Probably so, but from her point of view, it was so that she wouldn't, like, get sick.
Well,
and
yeah,
ill,
that too.
You know, but I thought that was interesting that they had that sort of, you know, so she said it was really sort of gross and not comfortable at all because it was just this sort of liquidy goo that she had all over her body.
Oh, but interesting.
Yeah. Here's my thing about that ending.
Okay.
What made me mad is granted in the end she killed him, but the fact that Harrison Ford's injury really had nothing to do with Michelle Pfeiffer, like it was his own thing.
Oh, the head injury?
Yeah. I was like, no, I
no, it was the ghost. It was the ghost.
Whatever. Like, I wanted Michelle Pfeiffer to be the one that, like, knocked him over so he smacked his head off the thing. Like, or whatever. But instead it was like the ghost scared him. He went, flipped out and smashed his head. And I'm like, man, I wish Michelle Pfeiffer had, like, the last bit before she was paralyzed, just smashed him upside the head with something.
I did sort of love that because I felt it added more suspense to that scene because it wasn't just about her, you know, you want her to get her feeling back so that she can get, you know, not drowned. But then once that happens, she has to be able to get out before he wakes up and then get the phone. Like, I felt like it added to the suspense.
No. I wanted him to have a head injury. I wanted her to be the one that inflicted the head injury.
That's the quote.
Rather than the ghost.
Well, Michelle Pfeiffer giggled a lot during their bed scenes, and they had to pause a lot. She was very giggly. She's very much in awe of him, and I kind of love this quote. She said, "I was a little intimidated, I admit. I was taken by his power, just the power of his presence."
Wait. I made the grossest face.
Me too.
We were like,
but there's more. Oh. I haven't run into that a lot. I remember Sean Connery having it as well, that ability to fill up the room. Lying in bed with Harrison, I got really shy. I couldn't stop giggling. It was completely annoying.
I hate all of that so much.
But
that's
she's
amazing.
I've heard this about Michelle Pfeiffer, that she's very shy. Like,
but that's fine. But, like, the fact that she said that his power or whatever the fuck it was. There's so many things that people say about men, and I'm like, can we not? Can you just not?
Well, here, this is what Robert Zemeckis said.
Well, Harrison Ford?
Yeah,
he said, gonna say his power in bed.
When he was in bed?
No, but it's funny because I didn't bring it with me, but I was reading a transcript of, like, you know, the sort of just, you know, big press conference that they had. Mm-hmm. And I think because it might have been different countries, it was the way it was translated, but someone asked her about being attracted to him, and then it kind of got the same question to Robert Zemeckis, and he was like, well, I'm not attracted to him. He's handsome. Like, it was like, he's like, he didn't know how to answer it. He got kind of awkward. No, he said, Harrison Ford brings a kind of Rock of Gibraltar strength to the screen. To me, he is the definition of absolute stardom.
Oh.
Also, something interesting, he filmed this movie in between filming Castaway because they had to pause for Tom Hanks to lose all the weight.
Oh, that's what he did with his time.
Yeah, he did another movie.
Oh, boy.
That's cool.
I'm still on the power shit.
I mean, it's the kind of things that you get, but you don't want to hear. Like making love. Sure, you probably do that. It happens, but don't call it that.
Call it literally anything else. There's doing so it. Many names for
doing it.
Did you guys also notice the shot when we can kind of see Michelle Pfeiffer on the ground and you can see it from her face?
Yes.
Apparently that was done with a glass floor.
That's what I was wondering how they made it go, how they made it look.
It was really cool.
So seamless. Because it's wood, and then it goes down, and then in the split second, it's definitely glass, because then they're shooting up from underneath, and it's her chin. It's such a cool shot. It's towards the end of the movie, that's where you see a lot of those effects, like where she slams the door on the car, and then you see the reflection in the side mirror.
That's a very cool scene, So you know that he's coming, but you don't know where he is. I thought it was really, and she's in the wrong car, and I thought that was really well done.
I was so glad she didn't drop the keys. She almost dropped the keys.
Yeah.
She didn't fully drop the keys, right? Like,
No.
She didn't in the car. She just realized she had the wrong one.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I feel like always in scary movies, they drop the keys. They just always drop the keys.
Fall and they can't figure out how to get back up. And it's like, I don't know what I'm doing.
And considering that she's getting feeling back, like, the fact that she was so calm and, not calm, but, like, focused. Also, I didn't realize until I read this afterwards and I had to rewatch it. when she's possessed by the ghost, her eyes change to green.
Yes.
Didn't notice that at all.
Yeah. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, she's wearing green contacts,
I don't think it happens all the time. Like, because there's some times where I was like, well, maybe it does happen all the time, but there are times when I was thinking that she was more possessed by the ghost, and where she was actually just more in her own power.
The contacts are whenever she's holding the hair. That's when she's taken over by Madison.
Okay.
Here's my thing. Maybe it's just because Michelle Pfeiffer's eyes are blue and you're changing them to green, so it's not a drastic change.
It is very subtle.
I missed it.
So I missed it.
I wish maybe they got someone who's blonde but has, like, brown eyes, so then it's very obvious when all of a sudden Michelle Pfeiffer has brown eyes.
Well, the casting I thought was really great because
she looks just like her, but
when she morphed into her, like, it was really uncanny.
Or that girl is in it for, like, 2 seconds. Make her wear brown contacts. So then just to, like...
Maybe, yeah.
Because it was just...
So that's... So to go through the cast, that is Amber Valletta, who is a model as well as an actress, and this was her second film.
Ooh.
She doesn't say anything, right? She never really has a line.
No.
But she's very eerie.
She does a thing when she scares Harrison Ford.
And the biggest person that I recognized, I don't know about you, Parisa, is Diana, I hope I say her name right, Scarwid. She played Jody, her friend, who just, like, always stops by.
Oh, yeah, I love her.
Here's my thing. I loved how they explained her stopping by and not staying. Because my favorite part of The Room is where the mother will... Have you ever watched Room? Not the Brie Larson one, the Tommy Wiseau one.
No.
Oh, it's the worst movie that's ever been made, but there's this character who literally comes by and will go, oh, I just wanted to say this one line to you, and then leaves. And so it's like, everyone makes fun of it, because you're like, well, that happens in movies all the time, though, where someone will just come by for the one line, and then they're gone. And in this movie, I love that they explain that she's like, I am not staying, I only came because your daughter just left, and I feel like I needed to check on you, and then I'm going home. And she gave them, like, I was like, perfect. That's all you have to do with those scenes where you need that one line is have just one little explanation of, like, I can't really stay, but I wanted to check on you. And I'm like, cool, into it. I got it.
Well, I like her because for me, she'll always be Christina from Mommy Dearest. Did anyone ever see that?
I've never seen Mommy Dearest.
No.
I know the quote, and that's it.
Do you know about Mommy Dearest, Parisa? It's
I know about it.
Yeah, it's a life of Joan Crawford. It's very campy. It's the whole no wire hanger thing, and she plays the young daughter who eventually wrote the book. Now, you may also not recognize her because she's usually a blonde, and so I was taken aback at first that she wasn't blonde, but I thought about something, and I feel like it doesn't happen as much now, but around that time, sort of in the 90s and 2000s...
The best friend was always a brunette.
Exactly. Or not even a brunette. It's the idea if the lead is blonde, the executive said... Well, we can't have two blondes in this movie.
No, that would be strange.
No, it would be odd.
It's so weird.
I remember this particularly when I was a kid. There's a movie called That Old Feeling with Bette Midler.
Mm-hmm.
And the secondary female in it is an actress whose name I can't remember now, but she was on NYPD Blue and she was a blonde. And they made her dye her hair red because Bette Midler was a blonde. And so I really think that they made her dye
Beaches
her hair.
Beaches is just changing the game.
Well, yeah, brunette.
And a redhead.
Yeah.
There's no blonde.
But that was, that's also a wig that I know a lot about Ben Miller.
Yeah.
That's
a wig. You know what I loved also? Oh, sorry. I was going to say another casting thing.
Please.
Joe Morton.
Oh, I know. Isn't he wonderful?
He's so amazing. And I was so glad to see him as the therapist because, you know.
Oh, I saw that guy in everything.
Yeah.
Pardon?
I've, like, seen that guy in everything.
He's that guy.
Yeah. He's Olivia Pope's dad. You know, and seeing him as the therapist playing, you know, to have an African-American man playing a New York therapist in the year 2000, I thought was pretty badass.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was a really great choice. And especially because whatever actor played that part didn't have presence.
You would never pay mind.
Yeah, it would have just been a very sort of like, well, let's move, like, okay, yes, she went to therapy, but he had so much presence. That guy is nothing but presence.
Yeah.
I want to see what him and Harrison Ford in a bed would be like. It would be like a power presence explosion.
And I thought it was great
No, just, you know, I love that, but I also was wondering, like, what was up with the fireball?
Yeah, right? They were fireballs that he handed her.
Oh, yeah.
Like a fireball?
Not a tissue. That's the thing I didn't get was, I thought, why? She's crying and he's handing her this ball. And then I thought, oh, maybe they're just like sweets. But yeah, they were fireballs.
They're fireballs. And she says, these are good. Ugh. Hot. There's a ghost in my house. That's what, like, she's like, yeah, I don't really want to talk about it. And he's like, fireball? And she's like, full disclosure. Like, what?
Thank you for this very hot candy.
Maybe he felt that it, like, maybe there was some scientific thing that it, like, makes you calm down. Because she doesn't take it out of her mouth to talk.
But the thing is, there is science. There's like some research around, like, if you're holding something warm, it makes you feel like you're having a good warm experience. If you're holding something cold, it's more likely that you'll judge the same experience as being not as great. And, you know, you have something hot in your mouth that you've got to get out, and it's dilating it's dilating something, capillaries or something in your mouth. You know, so maybe it is, there's like an opening up, but like, I've got to get this out thing that happens. And like, cause they also say when someone's crying, you shouldn't hand them tissues because it has a way of implying that they should stop.
Oh.
So maybe this has a way of like opening things. I need to get some fireballs.
That sounds amazing.
Just eat a bunch of fireballs.
So I don't know if you noticed this, Rachel, and you may not appreciate it because you're not watching all of Harrison Ford's movies, but the friend who's dating their friend who she knows from when she
was Elena.
Yeah, that's Wendy Crewson, and she's the wife from Air Force One. She's the first lady.
That's who she was. I recognized her face.
Me too.
Figure out why I knew her face.
And then I looked it up and I was like, oh my God, they're in another movie together.
But wait, I want to go back to Victor Stone's dad.
Oh, she wants to go back to Joe Morton.
Okay. I forgot he's Cyborg's dad in Batman vs. Superman.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Oh, he's going to be in Justice League?
He is, yes.
Okay.
But it's funny, a friend of mine, or a new friend of mine, did a show with him. And he said it was a little frustrating that, like, he had done so much work and then, you know, everyone wanted to talk about Scandal. You know, like, he's happy that he's known now, but it's like he's done so much. I always know him from Terminator. That's the first thing that I remember. Even though he's been, like, he's just that guy. He's
I just recognize his face. Yeah, yeah. Like, I've seen him and stuff, but I couldn't tell you anything. Yeah.
Ray Baker is sort of the same way. He's the friend, not as much. Oh, and also, this killed me. This is a very small part, but the female EMT worker, when he, like, electrocutes himself, I'm using air quotes, the male one is credited. The female one is not. Not in the movie, not in IMDb, and I know that actress, and I can't think of her name. I've seen her around New York all the time. She's been on ER. She works all the time. And I can't find her name. If anyone out there remembers her name and will tweet it to us, but she's not listed in the movie credits or on IMDb.
I wonder why.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that maybe she was an extra that got upgraded, but still, you'd get credited. It had to have been some sort of oversight. But the fact that the male, it literally says male ETM. dyslexic can't do anything.
EMT,
thank you. And then it doesn't list her. I thought that was, I was like, oh, her. Oh, I recognize her.
That was frustrating. I wonder what the story is behind that.
And James.
Because sometimes it's just about asking.
No, I was also going to say, and then there's James Remer, who has been in Fast and Furious. He's Warren Fuhrer.
So delicious.
Yeah. I had not ever seen him with a beard. I know him from Sex and the City. He's in
Change. He's a bad guy in Too Fast, Too Furious.
Yeah, and
I just watched that movie not long ago.
He breaks Kim Cattrall's heart on Sex and the City.
I totally forgot that was him.
It's the beard.
I recognized his face as soon as he came out, and I like couldn't remember what I knew him from. And then when you said Too Fast, Too Furious, I was like, right, he's like the asshole who wants to like get Paul Walker and Tyrese in trouble when they're trying to help him, and they're like going undercover.
He usually plays a bad guy. Like, this was...
He's on Dexter. He's Dexter's dad.
Oh, he is?
He's
dad. And then I also noticed
I've now seen him in all these things that I realized.
You like opened your mind.
Yeah,
this is, like, every episode where we go, oh, my God, that person. Oh, my God, that person. But also,
Dexter's dad.
I have not seen Dexter because of the blood and stuff. I'll get to it eventually.
It's not that bad.
Okay.
As a girl sitting here with a napkin because my nose was bleeding, I'm like, it's fine.
Miranda Otto, who plays
I was just going to say, I actually thought the blood and what lies beneath, like his accidental injuries and stuff are much, like, that that was gory to me.
Oh, yeah.
Because it looked real. Like, when someone's kind of slashing at someone, and, you know, and it, like, it doesn't bother me as much. But this was it looked like he really cracked his head open. And
the sound also, like, if like the, when he hits boom, it, like, and it's a lot. Miranda Otto, who played Mary Fuhrer, she's been in Lord of the Rings, Homeland,
isn't
24.
She the one that's like, but I am no man? Isn't that
I don't know,
her
she was not
Lord
familiar to me at all. And then I also realized as I was watching it that Madison's mother is Nicole Mercutio, who is the mother from While You Were Sleeping and the mother from many things. And then I looked her up and she passed away last year.
Oh.
Yeah, so... Anyways, those are the actors. Oh, also apparently in the original script, Claren Norman smoked pot and didn't have a close relationship.
What?
I know. No wonder he talks about, like, so many cooks in the kitchen. Like, there must have been, like, so many rewrites.
Wow.
I
could totally see them smoking pot. Like, they got a little, like, that night when Caitlin... You know, they dropped Caitlin off. I was like, these two is freaky. Like, what, you know, when they're like, no, you should leave it open. Let's see if we can take them.
But
you know, I was like, I was horrified. I can't imagine, like, having an orgasm contest with my neighbors.
I know. Oh my God. But also, okay. Here's
what
my
I would
thing.
Like to.
This movie, Michelle Pfeiffer is hot. We can, like, that's fine. But she is never not in, like, a long dress or, like, old mother clothes. Like, she is very much just Michelle Pfeiffer is hot in general, can wear a burqa, and you would think she's still hot. Harrison Ford is shirtless so many times in this movie.
He really is.
And I was like, they are like, this man is almost, he's pushing 60 at this point, and it's fine. He is still hot. And they were like, here you go.
But that being said, the fact that I can understand why they would push the script to make them closer, because they're... They have so much chemistry. Unlike the other movie we just watched, there's so much, you know, electric sort of sex between them that it makes it more of a surprise at the end because you think, oh, this is a really loving relationship.
And then he's a fucking weirdo.
And that's like one of the things that she's driving with him at the end, like trying to escape. It was just the thought of, oh my God, like how devastating to think you've spent your whole, you know, you spent like the last 20 years or 15 years with this person.
Oh, that was the most devastating to me. Yes.
Yeah. Like I realized that I'd never really thought about that, you know, but that like, wow, now she's going to have to deal with the psychological impact of like, I slept with this man like last week. You know, and then this week had to kill him. You know,
Speaking of Michelle Pfeiffer, what do we all think of Michelle Pfeiffer in general? That's your first
Catwoman
memory of her?
Because my family, we used to have all the Batmans on VHS. I remember, like, my childhood home. I remember weird specifics about it, but I was like 9 when we moved, so I don't remember the house.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember we had like a formal living room, and then you walk by into like where we hung out living room. In the formal living room, there was, like, this cupboard. And you could open the cupboard, and that's where all of our VHSs were. And I remember grabbing the Batmans, and me and my brother would watch them all the time. So, like, and Michelle Pfeiffer is Catwoman and One Fine Day.
Oh,
with George Clooney,
oh,
where they have the fish. Those are, like, my two favorite.
What
Michelle
about you,
Parisa?
So what's your first memory of Michelle Pfeiffer?
Gosh, I'm trying to think. Like, I mean, right now, I hope this isn't terrible cheating. I'm just looking at the list of things.
No, go for it.
You know, because I...
Well, how about this?
Like,
you want to look and I'll talk about mine?
Yeah, you
so,
look. You talk, I look.
Go ahead. And it's just so funny that we got to this movie now because this was talked about on the Golden Girls podcast, which I listened to. Hi, Carrie and H. Allen. And I was talking with Carrie online about this, and there's a small sect of people who really love Grease too. I am one of those people.
Oh, yeah, the internet went crazy the other week about saying that Grease 2 is better than Grease.
Whoa.
I know that's hard to say, but I grew up on, I had not seen Grease original until I was semi-adult. So I grew up watching Grease 2, and I loved it. I lip-synced to it in my first grade talent show. My mother made me a pink lady's jacket. Michelle Pfeiffer, I have a picture, actually, that she sent me. I will show you guys. In that movie meant a great deal to me. So that when Batman did eventually come out, I was so super excited to see her in it. And I actually remember that these two kids tried to, like, hit on me and my friend. And we were just like, we want to watch this amazing badass woman. You leave us alone? Oh, your skin is so nice. Seriously, go away! Like, he really touched me. And I was like, what is happening? Yeah, it was really weird because I was just so excited that she was going to be Catwoman. But something I also realized looking back at her career was that in 88 and 89, she had back-to-back Oscar nominations. And that was when I knew that she really started to sort of get, you know, the trajectory of her career really sort of went through the stratosphere. Mm-hmm. So she was nominated in 88 for Dangerous Liaisons, and then in 89 in Fabulous Baker Boys, which I originally thought had been sort of her big break. But she had done Married to the Mob before that. She had done Tequila Sunrise, which some people like, and obviously Scarface. So I think she's amazing, and I wish she would work more.
Me too. I'm just saying that she's got some stuff coming up.
Yeah, she was in something with Robert De Niro, right? Where they were in the witness protection program?
I think. I don't know.
She's Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh, yes, of course. I was like, she's in a... I was like, because I keep watching it, and it's because me and my friend Hannah, like, can't wait for that movie, because I love Daisy Ridley, but she loves Kenneth Branagh.
I was obsessed with Kenneth Branagh when I was 16.
You know... Hannah woke up from, like, surgery and asked her mom her opinion on Kenneth Branagh's facial hair in the trailer for Murder on the Orient. And I was like, what is wrong with you? And she, like, has loved him since she was a kid. Like, it's insane. So that whole trailer, she's like, I'll ignore the fact that I don't like this song. And I'm like, oh, I love when trailers that are, like, old-timey use modern music. And so it's like the two of us are going to clash when we watch that movie. But it was so funny because she's... that's the only reason I was like, I've seen her in a trailer. Yeah. I've watched the Murder on the Orient Express.
I remember being excited that, like, oh, she's kind of coming back, you know.
Yeah, she's Johnny Depp's wife. And she still looks hot as shit. Yeah. She's walking in the, like, in the train car thing.
Like, I in need the, to trailer. Watch the trailer.
She's, like, walking down this thing. And it looks like Michelle Pfeiffer in this movie. Like, it's like 17 years has passed, Michelle Pfeiffer. Age.
Yeah.
No, so she won't do it.
She won't
do it. So before I go into the reviews, mm-hmm. is there anything else about this movie that we want to talk about that we haven't covered?
I'm just very concerned about that daughter and her lack of care about her mother.
She's 18.
She's partying. Story.
It's her mom.
Yeah, you call your mother.
I mean, I would, but I was a nerd who loved my mom.
But
I'm glad she didn't get drawn back to the house, because that could have happened.
Yeah, that could have been,
like,
pretty bad.
They could have done where she arrived, like, in the middle of everything. Like, mom, hey, mom, is anybody home? I tried to call, but no one answered. And then she dies.
That would have been horrible.
I thought you didn't like, I don't like the weird jump scare things. Okay. I would rather me. I was like,
well, that would have been a jump scare. It would have been like, she would have been like,
but I would have known it was coming. And so I would have been like, oh, that bitch dead. Like, that's one of those that, like, she dead. Like, I'm aware.
I feel like, from a character point of view, that would have devastated her so much, she would not have been able to continue with
that's
the rest
fine.
Of the film.
That's fine. Probably not.
Have them kill each other. Ugh. Oh, I would have loved that. The daughter dies, she kills him out of revenge, and then she dies. Fuck yeah, into it.
Okay.
And rewriting it. It was her fault.
Entertainment Weekly said, and you're both going to love this one. After his corpse-on-corpse chemistry with Thomas in Random Hearts and Ormond in Sabrina, Ford's star-on-star alliance with Pfeiffer is a relief. The two Hollywood A-listers, a pleasing love match of dignity and sex appeal.
Yeah, because those movies... Well, okay. Sabrina, I don't agree with.
I don't agree with Sabrina either.
Sabrina.
We love
Sabrina. But he's not... he's kind of a corpse in Sabrina. That's the issue.
That's like, the it's point, not yeah, that she character
brings,
is
she brings out perfect. The love in him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, Humphrey Bogart was the same way. Gogart.
Yeah.
Like, that character is supposed to be, like, a stick in the mud, and she, like, revives him.
Yeah.
The San Francisco Chronicle said, Harrison Ford has taken the plunge, and it's about time. Ford's summer blockbuster is
That's
called...
That's a poor choice of words for a movie about drowning.
I love it.
He takes the plunge.
I think that's on purpose, because...
Yeah.
I don't think that whoever wrote that was quick enough for that. They probably were like... Oh, this is what you say. And then it was like, don't take a plunge.
Movie reviewers love puns. She does. Can I say something? Rachel hates puns, and she named the podcast, which is a pun.
Interesting.
I'm good at them. It doesn't mean I like them.
Oh, I love them. Please
I love them too.
More.
My best friends will torment me, and they'll sit somewhere and just say, whenever we're all together, we'll just say puns at me because they know I can't stand it. And I'm like, oh my God. Stop.
What if it was a pun about a shark?
I would hate that.
Okay. Ford plays off his familiar image in an unexpected ways, both subtle and large. That are good for him.
Large.
Large. Powerful, too.
Powerful, large Harrison Ford.
It is a big departure for the actor who really needed one after last year's Random Hearts. Everyone's just putting down Random Hearts.
Does that mean he's a piece of shit?
It was bad. It was bad, guys.
Now we need to see it.
A plane from New York to Miami crashes. I'm like, how does that happen?
She doesn't understand that the Miracle on the Hudson was a miracle. She thinks that every plane can crash in the water.
No. That's not what I mean. It's most of the time, huge disastrous plane crashes do not happen on domestic flights.
That's true. Back to back, bodies in water.
Wait, did I see Random Hearts? Sorry, please continue with the review. I'm going to look at
it. It's like, got great actors in it, like Bonnie Hunt is in it, and Dylan Baker, and...
It's about Harrison Ford's wife having an affair with someone else's husband. So then the two of them are trying to figure it out, and they, like, fall in love, but it's, like, there's no chemistry. It's shitty. And it's, like, I'm a stickler for, like, things like that. Like, most of the time, most of the time, domestic flights don't fucking crash like that. And so that's why I was, like, as someone who's terrified of flying, I know how a plane works. That's all of a sudden the plane crashed.
Got it.
Ugh, just why can't they get in a car accident? That would have been made so much easier.
Well, yeah, they're in the same cab.
It's very much feels like the novel. Like, not that I read the novel, but like it has too many storylines. Like, anyway, everyone should listen to our episode, but not watch the movie. So the movie did super well. It made triple its production budget of $100 million. Harrison Ford and Michelle Pfeiffer both won Blockbuster Entertainment Awards for Favorite Actor.
Like Blockbuster, like the dead movie.
There was an award. And the film received 3 Saturn Award nominations for Best Horror Film. I would not call it a horror. Best Director and Best Actress.
Their horror also includes thrillers.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
In November.
With a ghost.
In November of 2000.
It has a ghost.
That's true. It does have a ghost. In November of 2000, Movie Line named Harrison Ford the most unexpected, believable psychopath.
Maybe he is a psychopath.
I really hope he's not.
This movie proves Harrison Ford maybe isn't all that.
Zemeckis said, we're trying to make it really elegant. It's not a slasher film. And he felt that there's something about suspense films where you can manipulate time and place and storytelling that you can't do outside of a film. Which I agree. I saw a suspenseful play. And it didn't really work.
It depends on what play you're watching, though. Because if you watch, what is the name of that one where Christopher Reeve was covered in mud and he was gay?
Oh, we talked about this before.
Him and his gay lover. Yeah, it was Death something. Death Note?
No, we've had this conversation before. We should Google it. Google it.
Because that is a movie.
Because what I'm going to talk about.
Or a play that is like, you're watching it and you're like, oh shit.
So I'm going to quickly end this by saying that. So our next film actually skips to 2002, so we don't talk about 2001. But in 2001, Harrison Ford was listed in the Guinness Book of Records as the richest male actor.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a lot from, you know, we've taken.
Death Trap.
Death Trap. we've taken the story from him being a carpenter who could barely make a living to now, you know, being the richest actor alive. And then in 2001, which I think is a great way to sort of, you know, end the Harrison Ford talk, he saved another life.
What? Harrison.
So, again, using his helicopter to rescue a 13-year-old Utah Boy Scout who was lost, who ended up sleeping in a cave. He picked him up. He didn't realize at first it was Harrison Ford because he said, I really didn't care. I just wanted to get out of there. But when he found out it was Harrison Ford, he couldn't believe it. He went, oh my God, Han Solo just rescued me. How cool is that? It's like, I thought I was delirious at first, but then I realized I wasn't dreaming. And he said to the kid that, you know, he's like, well, I guess you should earn a merit badge for this. And the kid was like, I already earned one last summer. So this is a outside of Yellowstone National Park. All his friends asked if he got an autograph, and he said, no, but I got a hug and a handshake, and that's better than an autograph.
Yeah,
it is. I thought that was really sweet, yeah. So
I love kids being kind of smartasses to Harrison Ford.
Yeah, because they don't care.
Well, I told Lauren this story. My one friend's dad worked, like, PR on Clear and Present Danger,
mm-hmm.
and he, like, Harrison Ford came up and was asking him about his trains, and, like, he, like, said, is this Thomas? And my friend goes, no, this is clearly Percy. And, like, was, like, being, like, rude. And because he's a kid. And he goes, now he's, like, as a huge Star Wars nerd and stuff. He goes, I was, like, an asshole to Harrison Ford. He goes, he laughed, but I was an asshole to him. I was like, you know,
like, I love it. I love it.
So, Parisa, I thought we could take a moment and talk a little bit about what you're working on now. Because, funny enough, as you've mentioned, it has to do with ghosts.
Yeah, it does.
So you play, go ahead.
Oh, no, you.
I was going to say you play Fiji on Midnight Texas, which is.
I do.
So do they give you free Fiji water?
Not yet.
You got to write that in.
Get on that. Get on that.
I keep wanting to take pictures of it in the store and stuff, and then I'm like, that's free advertising. Wait, now, hold on. So I do like it.
So tell our listeners, maybe who haven't seen it, about a little bit about the show and about your character.
Sure, totally. So Midnight Texas is the name of the show that I'm on. So it's based on a series of books that were written by Charlene Harris, who was the same writer who the show True Blood's story was based on the books of. It's really hard to word that. Sorry, everybody. Charlene Harris is an amazing writer. She wrote a bunch of books. Some of them True Blood were based on, and then some of them are our show is based on. We're on NBC on Monday nights, 10/9 Central, and we are in the same world as True Blood in the sense that there are vampires and magic and things, but we're a different part of the country. And Midnight is the name of our town. It's this very remote town that sits on a veil between the living and the dead. And it, as a result, there's this kind of energy there that attracts supernaturals and attracts outsiders of all kinds because it creates this place of safety for them. But of course, because it's a TV show, that place is not going to stay safe. And we come into the show with this character, Manfred, who's a psychic, who's the one who really is who most interacts with ghosts. And they're kind of like, his life is getting really difficult. He lands in this town to have a sense of safety, and shit just goes wrong.
Yes.
And it just keeps going wrong, and it keeps getting wronger every episode. And my character is the town witch, and she's kind of an earth mother, likes to take care of people, really sweet, but also very watchful in the town, like just wants to make sure that the people that she loves are protected. And everyone in Midnight is like that, very protective of each other. It's very much about chosen family and about diversity and our differences making us stronger. So we continue to battle what's happening with this veil, which is beginning to fray now. So the worlds of the living and the dead are becoming closer. There's some evil, serious evil bubbling up through this veil, and it's bringing out not great things in the surrounding area. And I don't know else I can tell you without spoiling.
Yeah, no, it's hard, right? I mean,
yeah.
Five episodes, I believe, have aired already?
Four.
Four, okay.
This episode is coming up tomorrow. Yeah. And so we, you know, it's been a very interesting journey, our show. You know, so we battle supernaturals, but we also battle the difficulties in the world around us in real life. So there are actually, there's a storyline that deals with white supremacists that has just started to bubble up at the same time it's bubbling up in our life right now.
And I'm assuming you guys filmed this a while ago.
Yes, and it was written before. So we started filming episode 2 in October. And the episodes would have been written from months before that. So a lot of the storylines a couple of the major storylines that seem to reflect what's going on right now were written prior to these things being headlines. So that's been interesting.
When this show tells you that Steve Bannon is going to get fired from the White House, it was written 2 months before.
I'm up to date with the show, and it hasn't. So then it's in the past. So you know,
right? It hasn't done that yet. We don't predict the future. I would say things are more tapped into just what's happening. It's interesting to see how between Charlaine Harris, who wrote these books, had included a lot of what was happening now, and then our writing team focused on certain things that felt pertinent to the story. So some of them do happen to have bearing on what's going on right now, and then, you know, other stuff is pure fantasy.
Pure fantasy.
Well, considering my issue with some blood and horror, I'm actually enjoying it. I've closed my eyes a couple times, but I'm getting used to it. But that's one thing you were talking about, the family that everyone has sort of created, and that's something I really do like about the show too, is it makes me more interested in the characters the more they're invested in each other.
Same. I mean, like, that was what attracted me, part of what attracted me to this. I mean, the character of Fiji is, I saw so much of myself in her in the script and then in the books. But then really seeing the way that they come together, and everyone is so different. In the books, you don't necessarily see ethnic differences as much as you do in the show, but in the books still everyone was bringing very different things to the table. So there were different kinds of diversity in the books, and now being able to cast around that and reflect the ethnic diversities that we've got has been really cool. But it's still, the ethnicity of different characters is less important at this point, for the most part, than really who they are, which is the thing that really touches me. You know, all the relationships, or most of the relationships in the show, are interracial. So in the books, there's diversity of thought and temperament more so than ethnicity. There is some diversity in the books, ethnic diversity. In the show, you know, they're able to cast differently, and really there was Monica Owusu-Breen, who is our showrunner, who, as I was saying, she also worked on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Lost, and Fringe, and like everything that I love. But, you know, they were very insistent upon casting people based on the right feel. So it wasn't so much about what they looked like. They had to feel right for this part. And as a result, it made it so that they were so careful about it that as actors, we fit together in similar ways to the ways that our characters have. So when we do these group scenes together, there's a chemistry that we don't have to play at, because we're all psyched to be in the same room as actors anyway, and the characters are psyched to be in the same room together. So that's a very great, you know, experience. And then, you know, we also have, I think, almost all the relationships are interracial. All of them are sort of mix. Yeah.
I hadn't even thought about it.
Yeah. Well, good. That's a pretty good thing for nowadays. I mean, it's good to appreciate it, but it's also nice that it's becoming more normal. Mm-hmm. But so all of the relationships are a mix of superpowers and quote unquote normal human things, and like no two people are exactly alike, which I love. And you just really see how that works. And behind the scenes, because we're all so different, not just ethnically, but like in every way, from like our spiritual beliefs to how we grew up, like we're super different, but there's a love between us that helps things work so well. And it's very, you know, life affirming to be a part of something like that.
Now, you got to go to Comic-Con this year. Not only, I know last year was New York and this year in San Diego. What was that experience like?
It was amazing. It was a whirlwind. You know, we premiered the day after Comic-Con, so it was treated as kind of our premiere weekend. And it was a lot of great press, you know, just talking with people who are familiar with the show because they'd seen some episodes, or who are familiar with Charlene Harris's work and were just really psyched. And then meeting fans of the show already, because we'd had people that saw it back at Comic-Con, or who at Comic-Con New York, or who had been reading the books and were just really psyched to see the cast and the writers. And the energy at Comic-Con is so beautiful. It's so like people just come with their hearts like wide out into the open, and being a part of that, it's fantastic. I was like, this was my first Comic-Con, and now I just want to go back to every Comic-Con and be a part of that energy. It's, you know, as crazy as it is, you hear about like the, you know, the lines, and there's tons of people, and I'm not a crowd person, but there's just so much sweetness in the air that it's pretty addictive. I like it.
Right. It's like you go to Comic-Con and you're miserable because you're like, I'm waiting in like a million lines, but then you're like, I bet I want to go next year. Like, it makes no sense how you feel about Comic-Con. It's like, I don't want to be here, but then I do more than anything.
Yes. May I suggest you spend your first day there wearing high heels the whole time.
Oh, right. No.
Like we were. Because then once you take them off, everything is so great about your entire life that you, so if you do sometimes have mixed feelings about being at Comic-Con, definitely do the heels the first day and then sneakers every other time, and you'll be like, this is the best thing ever.
I love Comic-Con.
Yay.
Well, Parisa, this has been amazing. Thank you for staying with us the extra time.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Seriously. Thank you so much.
So tell the lovely people where they can find you on social media.
So you can find me on Twitter at Parisa FH, that's P-A-R-I-S-A-F-H, and then on Instagram at Parisa Fitzhenley, F-I-T-Z-H-E-N-L-E-Y. And I'm pretty active on Twitter. I'm slightly addicted to it, but I really love interacting with folks about the show and about other stuff, so you know, it'd be great to see people on there.
Do you have any other projects coming up you'd like to plug?
Sure. I just shot a short that's a part of a larger documentary about the queer contributions to the Harlem Renaissance.
Ooh.
Called Congo Cabaret. And I play Congo Rose, who's a jazz singer. Her character is from a novel written about that time. And I think at this point, you know, they're putting together the project. I think they're finalizing some of the financing stuff and doing some fundraising and or crowdfunding. And just a great thing to be a part of. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with it.
That's awesome.
Awesome. So, Rachel, where can they find you on social media?
They can follow me on Twitter at Rachel Leishman. I'm on Instagram at Rachel_Leishman. And I'm on Tumblr at Rach Solo.
I am only on Twitter. I have an Instagram, but I made a joke that no one would make me join, and I'm committed to my joke. So
yeah. She's never posting on it. She just has it. She doesn't use it.
Because I made that joke, and now I'm like, it's such a good joke. But maybe one day. I'm learning Instagram through running our Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
So you can find me at Lauren Milberger, LaurenMilberger on Twitter. You can find the Forgecast podcast as the Forgecast podcast on Instagram, Tumblr, and Facebook, except on Twitter at the Forgecast PC. You can find us online at our website at
theforgecastpodcast.com.
Oh my God, how could I forget that?
I don't know.
We should also mention our sponsor, We say we're going to mention the middle of the show and then
do it at the end.
Forget to. So hopefully people are still listening. Prisa, I'm going to send you some lovely samples. It's called Haas Urban, haasurban.com. Ooh. It's all organic skincare. It was originally actually made for actors, but obviously it could be for anybody.
Ooh.
So we're going to send you some iconic cleanser. But what's your favorite that you use?
Well, I say it literally every time.
You do.
So, I won't talk about it.
I want to know.
Headshot. You put it in your lotion and it makes your skin real smooth.
For when you have headshots or want to look like you're getting headshots.
Yeah. So you use it and it makes your skin real smooth. But I also use their little baths. They're not called bath salts.
You gotta get the name right so people.
They're bath salts. It's like you put them in your bath and they're like Epsom salts and it helps like relax you
muscles,
and you chill.
Yeah.
It's really great.
Yeah, one day I'll get the name of that. I also like the headshot. I put it in on my skin and in my moisturizer. And they have these amazing lip glides that are named after different alcoholic drinks. So my favorite is Summer Sangria because it's really sweet. I really like that. And there's also Wisteria Lane Body Butter that I also put on my hands, which I really like. If anyone listening likes our show, they should give us a review on iTunes, which we would so appreciate.
And then if they want to also go and buy stuff at Haas Urban, they can, and they can get 10% off if they use Ford at checkout.
I'm so glad you remembered that.
Ooh, I'm going. What's the website?
Haus and then urban.com.
Sweet.
Also something that I wanted to announce, although would you like to announce it? We are joining.
We are joining Rogue Portal. It's an entertainment website to cover all your geeky interests. And it's basically like a pop culture thing, and it's a really cool website.
Podcasts, reviews, and so we're going to be syndicated on their website, which is really exciting. So definitely follow them. Go to the website. It is rogueportal.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a new sponsor. So we give out stickers and prizes online and also through the show by listening and answering a trivia question and following us all over social media. And we got some really amazing Harrison Ford stickers from Ruby, who listens to the show, and she sent you a gift.
She sent me a gift. She sent me Colin Firth, who I put on my laptop, and then I messaged her today. It was like, Colin Firth's a little lonely. Can I get Chris Pine? So now on my keyboard, I have Ruby's Colin Firth, and when I get it, I'll have Ruby's Chris Pine, and they'll be friends.
She's got a lot of heads, a lot of people that we talk about on the show.
Her Harrison Ford ones are awesome.
Really good. And I'll take a picture, put it online to show everybody, and we'll give those out. And she's at Rubinator4708 on Redbubble. In 2 weeks, we'll be doing K-19 Widowmaker. And then we also will be talking about female directors in general because it is directed by Kathryn Bigelow. Priest, is there anything else you'd like to add before we say goodbye to everybody?
Yes, I just want to say like how psyched I am to have been able to talk with you guys. I think this is really cool, and you guys are great to talk with.
Yay.
And I'm just, yay, thank you. And thanks to everybody who's listening. I look forward to seeing like what people's responses are to the show and stuff.
Yeah, guys, watch Midnight Texas.
Please do. And
I meant your show, but ours.
So thank you, everybody, for listening to our extra long episode because we had so much fun. And we'll see you in 2 weeks with K-9 Widowmaker, which is about a submarine.
Yeah. Water.
Oh, it's right. Oh, God, more water. All right.
Bye.